This episode of The Sweaty Penguin is brought to you by Barbie Girl. Are you in a Barbie world? Try Barbie Girl today.
Welcome to episode 126 of The Sweaty Penguin, Antarctica's hottest podcast. I'm your host, Ethan Brown. Today, we are talking about vinyl chloride, also known as 2023's hottest breakout star in the industrial chemical scene. Vinyl chloride is a chemical used primarily to make polyvinyl chloride, or PVC, a common material in plastics and every cake on Cake Boss. Seriously, that show should have been called PVC Fondant and Rice Krispies Treats Boss. But vinyl chloride made headlines for a less fun reason, unfortunately, with her debut performance this year during the East Palestine, Ohio train derailment.
There's a toxic material in the Ohio train derailment that you need to know about. It's called vinyl chloride. Five of the cars that derailed in East Palestine were carrying the chemical compound, which is a hazardous material used to make plastic. 3 days after the accident, responders did a controlled burn of the cars carrying the substance out of fear they would explode.
It takes a lot for a random chemical to get national news coverage, especially at the bright young age of 188. You go, girl! But that derailment was a massive catastrophe, as we discussed in a past Tip of the Iceberg episode. It resulted in 23,000 gallons of vinyl chloride being released into the surrounding environment. That's the equivalent of almost 20,500 whippets. That's right, we did whippet math. That vinyl chloride contaminated waterways, caused air pollution, and did a number on the environment and human health in East Palestine. As such, it's no wonder the chemical made the news, and that's why we wanted to do a deep dive into it today. We'll talk about how vinyl chloride exposure can be dangerous, what impact the chemical has on the environment, and how we can prevent accidents and harm in the future. The Sweaty Penguin is presented by Peril and Promise, a public media initiative from the WNET Group in New York, reporting on the issues and solutions around climate change. You can learn more at pbs.org/perilandpromise. If you want to take 2 minutes to help out the Sweaty Penguin, you can either leave us a 5-star rating and review, or join our Patreon at patreon.com/thesweatypenguin. Doing either earns you a special shout-out at the end of the show. Joining the Patreon gets you merch, bonus content, and a whole lot more. But first, it's time for Vinyl Chloride 101. Vinyl chloride is a colorless and flammable gas that does not occur in our environment naturally. In fact, the closest we get to producing it outside of a factory is through the combustion process in tobacco smoke. Delicious! The PVC made from vinyl chloride is used in a variety of everyday products, including cables, pipes, flooring, shoes, and even credit cards. Just like corn syrup, the cha-cha slide, and inexplicably those giant Shen Yun billboards, she's everywhere. But vinyl chloride doesn't occur in the environment naturally, which means we have to actually create it. Cillian Murphy, if you're looking for another movie idea, call us when the strike is over. You can wear the hat again. To produce vinyl chloride, Cillian starts with the extraction of two resources, oil and salt water, which also happens to be two of my favorite spa treatments. From the oil, we get hydrocarbon ethylene, and from the salt water, we get chlorine. When we combine the chlorine and the ethylene, we end up with ethylene dichloride, or EDC. Not to be confused with estimated day of completion, which is when I say I'll get something done tomorrow, take a week-long nap, order takeout 8 times, and then ultimately turn it in 6 months later. EDC is used to make vinyl chloride in two different ways, oxychlorination and direct chlorination. You still with me? I'm barely with me, but let me explain. Direct chlorination is when the EDC undergoes thermal cracking, where the hydrocarbons are subjected to high temperatures, and this breaks the molecular bonds, and in the process yields a small amount of vinyl chloride. Oxychlorination is where, after this process, we can yield even more vinyl chloride. A byproduct of that thermal cracking of EDC is called hydrogen chloride, and hydrogen chloride reacts with ethylene again in the presence of oxygen, and this creates more EDC. That EDC is then thermally cracked with the EDC we originally got in direct chlorination, and vinyl chloride is produced. Direct chlorination and oxychlorination are usually combined at large vinyl chloride manufacturing facilities. If this is making you imagine the water cycle diagram with poison instead, you're close enough. The ways we obtain vinyl chloride result in the production of PVC, which, like Mother to Many America Ferrara's range, is extremely versatile. It's used in super thin plastic wrap and rigid industrial pipes. But let me be clear, while America Ferrara could do saran wrap, PVC could never do Ugly Betty. The most common place PVC is found is in construction materials. This plastic is highly durable and resistant to moisture and abrasion. To get this material, vinyl chloride has to go through the process of polymerization, which essentially breaks up the chemical bonds and lets them form a chain, the intensity of which inspired Drake's famous "started from the bottom, now we're here" bar. Somewhere along this transformation, a toxic chemical is made into a relatively safe material, but this episode isn't about the safe end product. No, that would be boring. Let's keep flirting with the toxic manipulative queen and ignoring everything our therapist tells us. So how do we get exposed to vinyl chloride? The Environmental Protection Agency notes that ambient air concentrations of the chemical remain generally low, and that the majority of exposure comes from evaporating waste near the factories that produce vinyl chloride or emissions from the factories themselves. But vinyl chloride can also be released from degrading PVC products. PVC pipes transporting drinking water can contaminate that water with vinyl chloride, and new cars with PVC plastic parts have air concentrations of vinyl chloride that are slightly higher than normal. PVC can essentially leach vinyl chloride into surrounding environments, which is why PVC food packaging is banned in countries like Canada, Spain, South Korea, and the Czech Republic. Many medical supplies are also now made PVC-free because vinyl chloride would leach out of medical plastic products, which explains how the hospital halls already had that new car smell. But the main way people are exposed for long periods of time is when they work in the factories that produce vinyl chloride. Occupational exposure is what leads to a majority of the long-term health effects associated with the chemical, but spills into the environment and burning of the chemical often lead to surrounding populations being exposed without them even knowing it. What happens once we're exposed to vinyl chloride? Well, let's dive into it. Our expert this week is Dr. Juliana Beyer, assistant professor of medicine at the University of Pittsburgh. According to Dr. Beyer, the biggest issues for human health actually come in the liver.
So I think the main toxicity is on the liver because it gets metabolized in the liver. And so these degradation products, if you want to call it so, they are, as I said, they are highly reactive. So they react immediately. So this is why the main effects stay in the liver, because, you know, of course, if they would travel, they could cause the same effects everywhere in the body. But because it's such a fast reaction, it just basically stays where they are being produced.
Now, I don't live under a rock. I know that when your middle school health teacher explains something being toxic to the liver, you all just want to consume it even more. But I'm telling you, it's not a good idea. Vinyl chloride is considered a group 1 carcinogen, as is alcohol, by the way, but we're not going to do that right now. I can only talk you out of drinking one chemical at a time. Dr. Beyer has been one of the leaders in researching these carcinogenic effects of vinyl chloride, so I'll let her share a bit more about that research.
So in the 1970s, so before I came to the University of Pittsburgh, I was at the University of Louisville, Kentucky, And there in the 1970s, they found that vinyl chloride had caused cancer, a rare form of cancer. It's called hepatic angiosarcoma. So back when they realized that, they also formed a biobank. And those samples still exist at the University of Louisville. And then a few years ago, a friend and colleague of mine looked back at those samples and noticed that everybody or most of the patients that they collected samples from, even the ones that didn't develop cancer, had some form of underlying liver disease. So that's when they first realized, okay, vinyl chloride can cause several stages of liver disease. And then there was really nobody there who could figure out the mechanisms behind, or nobody had the time to do it. And I said, okay, I'll do it. I was intrigued by the entire situation. And so that's how I got into it.
Through the research of Dr. Beyer and others, scientists have enough evidence to conclude vinyl chloride is associated with an increased risk of liver cancer, brain and lung cancers, leukemia, and lymphoma. What's more, health experts have also considered vinyl chloride to be genotoxic. Which, no, does not mean your defense is prone to getting diced up by Seattle Seahawks quarterback Geno Smith. Or Pete Carroll, for that matter. How he's 71 years old and still better than Drew Locke is beyond me. Genotoxic means the carcinogen has no safe exposure and is thought to cause damage even in small doses. Part of the issue, according to Dr. Beyer, though, is that we have some uncertainty around when and how vinyl chloride affects our health.
There are really two problems. We don't know what we can really consider as safe concentrations at this time because we don't have enough background information. And we also don't really know what a safe time frame is. So we don't really know what we are looking at. So I think this needs to be observed longitudinally for both for concentration and for time to see what the effects are.
In other words, we don't know everything, but we know enough to be really, really concerned. It's like the "we need to talk" text of human carcinogens. Need more information, but there is no scenario in which we're good. So all that begs the question, why does vinyl chloride create these carcinogenic effects? While again, we don't know everything, Dr. Beyer offered some really helpful insights on what happens when this chemical enters the body.
The major risk stems from inhaling. So you inhale the vinyl chloride and most of it gets exhaled, actually. However, there is a small portion of it that reaches the liver and there it gets metabolized. And it's not the vinyl chloride itself that is toxic, but it's the metabolites. The metabolites are highly reactive, so they can bind to the DNA, so therefore cause mutations in the DNA. However, what we also found out, and we really don't know yet how, is that it can cause metabolic changes within the liver, and therefore the whole organism. We have shown that it affects the mitochondria functionally and structurally, so the mitochondria actually look different. And this causes all these downstream effects that we see. But how this exactly works, we don't know. We need to do a lot more research.
Not so much of a powerhouse of the cell now, huh, mitochondria? You see a toxic chemical and you just get steamrolled? Was ninth grade biology a lie? Unfortunately, while liver damage is the most obvious concern since vinyl chloride gets metabolized in the liver, this is just one of many downstream effects. A small set of those exposed also can develop what's called vinyl chloride disease. Vinyl chloride disease includes symptoms of Raynaud's syndrome, which refers to when the blood vessels in the hands and feet are oversensitive and lose heat in cold conditions. The disease resulting from vinyl chloride exposure combines this syndrome with acroosteolysis, which occurs when bones in the phalanges dissolve in the hands and there is bone loss from the reabsorption process. Yes, fellow Friends fans, phalange is a real word. It refers to the bones in the fingers and toes, which means if you are exposed to vinyl chloride, you could actually have something wrong with the left phalange. Lisa Kudrow, if you want to make a PSA with us, just say the word. And if that wasn't enough, vinyl chloride disease also often results in scleroderma-like skin changes, leading to more inflammation and skin thickening, and effectively making it the mighty Morphin Megazord of vascular diseases. People exposed to vinyl chloride without the disease can experience headaches, drowsiness, and memory loss in the short term, all the side effects of a great cocktail without any of the great cocktail. There is also evidence that vinyl chloride can damage our peripheral nervous system, which are the nerves lying outside of the brain and spinal cord. Presumably these same nerves I get on when I write terrible puns instead of actual comedy on here. Another concerning impact of vinyl chloride is on human reproductive systems. Workers in vinyl chloride factories can have miscarriages in their families, and exposure is associated with birth defects as well as decreased male fertility. Yeah, now the dudes are listening. Well, except the ones that drop bowling balls on their crotches for Facebook reels. Guys, why? It's not even fun to watch. But if that wasn't enough reason to listen up, let me try this. Limited studies also report adverse impacts on male sexual performance. And yes, men, it can go down from here. While vinyl chloride is a risk to everyone, there are a few factors that can make it worse.
What we do know is that in the adult population, there are subpopulations that may be more vulnerable, elderly, obese, or just overweight even. All these, and consuming drugs and alcohol, all these things can be causing underlying liver disease. So if there's already some semblance of liver disease there, we have shown in our research that vinyl chloride at low concentrations can enhance that. So what we have seen, and this is in preclinical studies, where we modeled non-alcoholic liver disease. So basically liver disease at earlier stages caused by overeating, so overnutrition, while there was some injury and damage to the liver with, you know, overnutrition, it was dramatically enhanced with vinyl chloride at concentrations that are currently considered safe.
To sum up, vinyl chloride bad. Don't trust her Notes app apology, it's just posturing. And with that context, let's discuss the East Palestine train derailment. When the Norfolk Southern train derailed, vinyl chloride was released into the surrounding environment, in large part because it was burned off. The chemical is unstable at high temperatures, meaning that after the train carrying it had derailed, authorities determined that a controlled burning into the atmosphere was the best way to avoid an explosion. Glad to see America is trying to avoid explosions now. Maybe Killian won't be interested in the vinyl chloride movie after all. But unfortunately, burning the chemical into the atmosphere left air quality, water quality, and public health in danger. The intentional burning of 23,000 gallons of vinyl chloride resulted in the release of phosgene, a toxic gas used in World War I. Oh, hey Killian, welcome back. And hydrogen chloride, two gases that you couldn't mask with even the best Yankee candles. These two chemicals cause lung and throat irritation and can even cause death. But a large portion of the issue in East Palestine wasn't due to air pollution, but rather water pollution.
It's not a persistent pollutant like some others, for example, PCBs and some others, dioxins. However, it can persist in the groundwater for quite a while because there's no sunlight. And there's no air, so the chance for it to be broken down in the groundwater is relatively low. So, and it can't, you know, if it can't evaporate into anything, then it can persist in there for longer periods of time. And that's where the risk then stems from is what, let's say, given the case there is a home located over contaminated groundwater. And in some areas, like East Palestine, the groundwater level is relatively high. So if the temperatures rise, it can evaporate from the groundwater directly into those homes, or it can come through the water that's being used in those homes if they are using well water.
And that drinking water issue presented a real concern for the residents of East Palestine. In fact, a News 5 Cleveland survey conducted this month, 6 months after the derailment, found 58% of East Palestine residents are still afraid to drink the water. That's worse than the number of dehydrated girlfriends afraid to drink water. While officials have said the water is safe now, the fact that people are still concerned is extremely noteworthy, especially given a lot of the uncertainties around the chemical that we've discussed. And unfortunately, it's not just humans facing these issues. Ohio's Director of Natural Resources announced that at least 3,500 fish of 12 different species were dead due to the controlled burning of vinyl chloride in East Palestine. Residents living near the planned building also reported sick pets, and many had reported symptoms of diarrhea, swollen faces, heart failure, and trouble functioning. Furthermore, sometimes vinyl chloride is actually produced when microorganisms in the soil are trying to clean up separate contamination in groundwater. Trichloroethylene and tetrachloroethylene are common industrial solvents that often contaminate groundwater, and when soil microorganisms are trying to break these solvents down, vinyl chloride is produced, and while that may be a bad outcome, at least they're trying something, so I don't want to hear any micro-slander. If we don't count the accident in East Palestine, this is actually the most common source of vinyl chloride in Ohio. Another way vinyl chloride harms wildlife is through acid rain. While acid rain has declined significantly over the last few decades as humans have phased out the chemicals that caused it, vinyl chloride is one chemical that can bring acid rain back, an unfortunate side effect of Lady Gaga and Ariana's inspiring collaboration, Rain on Me. Vinyl chloride contributes to acid rain because the monomers of the chemical are stable in the absence of oxygen and sunlight, and can dissolve into water and soil easily. Dissolved in the environment, vinyl chloride can travel long distances, like the embarrassing ripple effect you cause when you mess up a step in the cha-cha slide, and with similarly devastating results. Habitat destruction and adverse effects on plant health from acid rain weaken the resilience of natural ecosystems. While East Palestine has all the attention now, and for good reason, they're not the only area affected. The factories making vinyl chloride are only in some areas, and many of the people working there suffer the long-term effects we've discussed. We've talked about Cancer Alley in Louisiana before, primarily in our chloroprene episode, and if you haven't yet listened, be sure to check out that episode. Cancer Alley stretches from New Orleans to Baton Rouge, despite the Department of Tourism's alleged efforts to rebrand it as a sort of Mad Max-themed Disneyland. The population is about 40% Black as compared to 12% nationwide, and it is predominantly low income as well. Cancer Alley has 150 chemical plants, one of which is Shintech, whose emissions account for 1/3 of all vinyl chloride emissions in the state of Louisiana. This leaves already disenfranchised communities living near Shintech disproportionately impacted and suffering health disadvantages. In Plaquemine, Louisiana, where one Shintech plant is located, the population is actually 56% African American and almost 30% live below the poverty line. How about economic impacts? Well, obviously, there is a benefit in the form of PVC. We're not just making toxic chemicals for funsies. Just kidding, of course it's fun, Killian. No, we'll do the movie, come back. But there's a cost, too. In East Palestine, I took a look at some real estate data, and while I want to be careful drawing conclusions from it, because it's a very small sample size, and the real estate market is wackier than every person who's knit a scarf combined, I'll just tell you the data. In January, before the derailment, the median sales price for properties in East Palestine was $280,000. In March, after, it was $45,000. In 6 of the 7 months prior to the derailment, there were either 1 or 2 foreclosure filings. In March, there were 5. Again, these numbers are way too small a sample to say the derailment caused it. But that, combined with locals speaking about wanting to leave and wanting the rail company Norfolk Southern to compensate them for damage, I think it's fair to say at least a portion of that can be traced to the derailment. And beyond real estate, there are major healthcare costs for people affected, of course. And for the company, Norfolk Southern is spending an estimated $1 billion trying to clean up the mess in Ohio, which is nearly triple the value of all the real estate in East Palestine combined. Right now, the economy, the environment, and human health are 0 for 3 against vinyl chloride. While we obviously don't see as dramatic a hit in other vinyl chloride hotspots, these same impacts obviously exist in more of a long-term view. Again, check out our chloroprene episode because we shared a bit about how residents of Cancer Alley have struggled economically in the wake of chemical pollution there. And then there's our season diva, climate change. On the one hand, vinyl chloride requires energy to manufacture. In 2020, PVC production emitted roughly 18 million metric tons of carbon dioxide in the United States alone. There is evidence that PVC contributes more to global warming than other popular plastic polymers like polyethylene and polypropylene. And to her credit, a gold medal in climate change acceleration is still a gold medal. Vinyl chloride is also made from ethylene, which is a petroleum product, so anything made from vinyl chloride required fossil fuel extraction. You can check out any of our carbon bomb episodes or our fracking episode, or really half our catalog, I guess, to learn the impacts of that. But fossil fuels are still in the equation, so you better get used to the smell of gas. Wait, is that gas? Hey, Sharon, can you go check the stove? But it's not just vinyl chloride contributing its small part to climate change. Climate change can also affect exposure to vinyl chloride. Climate-induced extreme weather events can also cause the chemical to leak into the environment and into neighborhoods living near plants. In fact, critics are comparing them to the poorly received auto-download of U2's album in 2014. The EPA's risk management plan covers over 12,000 chemical facilities across the United States, and a third of those are estimated to be at significant risk of wildfires, sea level rise, storm surges, and flooding. More than 200 million people, mostly minority communities, are in what the EPA considers worst-case scenario zones for the destruction of chemical plants from natural disasters. So not only are these populations facing high pollution, medical bills, and many other problems, but they're also the most at risk for future exposure brought on by climate change-related weather events. Are we all doomed to a life of inhaling vinyl chloride? Of course not. In our next segment, we'll explore alternatives to vinyl chloride, policy options, and how Killian Murphy can protect us when vinyl chloride is present.
Is life in plastic fantastic? Then a Barbie girl is for you. With a Barbie girl, you can brush her hair, undress her everywhere. So imaginative. You can touch, you can play. If you say I'm always yours, wait, did anyone notice how concerning these lyrics are without the music? Barbie girl. Make her walk, make her talk, do whatever you please. Are you guys hearing these lyrics?
The Sweaty Penguin is presented by Peril and Promise, a public media initiative from the WNET Group in New York, reporting on the issues and solutions around climate change. You can learn more at pbs.org/perilandpromise. So where do we go from here? Well, there are plenty of vinyl chloride solutions. I mean, if you've ever done a chemistry lab in high school, you know when there's a chemical, there's usually a solution. Yeah, I was in over my head with that pun. First off, at an individual level, it's important to actually find out if you're at risk of exposure or not. Most of us are not. Apparently only I use PVC pipes as milkshake straws. But if you are exposed to vinyl chloride, there are some steps you can take.
I don't want to scare people. I think that the majority of the population is currently safe. And I'm not even saying that people that live in East Palestine are unsafe. I just would like for everybody to be a little more aware, try to use filtration systems that work. So unfortunately for vinyl chloride, HEPA filters and the charcoal filters aren't really effective. So one of the things that I always say to people, air out your homes. And I think that's in general, a pretty good advice, because we don't know what accumulated within our own homes. And so if we can just, of course, making sure that the outdoor air has a good quality, but you can find that on, you know, on the Weather Channel or whatever, and just make sure that regularly you just exchange some air within your homes and maybe workplaces if possible.
Okay, how about larger scale steps? One way we can prevent future exposure to vinyl chloride is to not use it in the production of plastics. Phasing out vinyl chloride requires many different parties and collaboration across those parties, perhaps through the uniting venue of pool or pizza parties. Governments could take care of regulations and hosting, companies that produce vinyl chloride could conduct research on potential alternatives and the snacks, and companies that use vinyl chloride could be the ones to bring the non-PVC solo cups. And the good news is, there is already research looking into the alternatives to PVC, including bio-based plastics made from upcycled and renewable sources like food waste, vegetable oils, and plant starch. These are currently more expensive to produce and consume, so they may not work as a direct substitute for PVC just yet, but there's always a possibility costs come down or some party hosts are willing to pay a premium. Those are the same hosts that demand you bring your reusable water bottle so they don't have to buy drinks. Annoying and clever. Bioplastics are also not 100% harm-free and can release chemicals when they don't degrade fully in landfills. They may have a limited shelf life, which doesn't compete with a no-shelf life material like PVC. And they aren't always derived from perfectly sustainable sources. But if bioplastics can overcome some of these hurdles, it could offer an exciting alternative and allow our Barbie girls to begin the migration to life in bioplastic, which has plenty of potential to be fantastic. We could also just find ways to use less plastic in general, which could reduce the need for producing and transporting vinyl chloride.
We should, you know, produce less plastic. I mean, anybody can help with that. We are in our home barely using any plastics, but I think that is not necessarily only just vinyl chloride. And then I think just the transportation of vinyl chloride, I mean, it is risky to use as it is, but I think polyvinyl chloride in its polymer state is relatively safe. I don't know what the needs are for it to be have to be transported, which is where the major risk comes in.
Obviously, it's unlikely we won't need any plastic ever again, but when we look back in time, we've seen governments go so far as to ban PVC and vinyl chloride in particular products, and the world didn't end. Well, I guess it did for REM, but even they feel fine, so I think we're okay. But it's true. In the 1970s, for example, vinyl chloride in aerosols was banned by the Consumer Product Safety Commission, the agency that develops uniform standards. Now, these individual agencies only have power over bans in certain products. The Consumer Product Safety Commission couldn't ban vinyl chloride-containing aerosols in food and drugs, for instance, since those are regulated by the FDA. But if you're a fan of the ban, also known as a hashtag ban stan, agencies do have tools that do that to an extent, and Congress can always give them more tools or take on that responsibility themselves. We can also improve safety standards. As Dr. Beyer mentions, we still have questions surrounding how different concentrations of vinyl chloride affect different people. Gathering data and making standards accordingly could be one path to improving safety.
The safety standards come from experience, basically. So from research that has been done in preclinical studies, mostly meaning animal studies, but also from some exposed humans. So of course, they were, some of them were investigated for liver damage. However, this is usually more on an occupational level. So these are the human data coming from higher exposed individuals. We don't have any data on low exposure levels in humans. So therefore, I'm always saying we can't really know for sure what the safe levels are because we don't have the data for that. And there are also different standards. So the EPA has different standards than OSHA based on, you know, exposure levels.
How about transportation? It's worth noting that despite the disaster in East Palestine, rail transport is the safest way to move this chemical. We shouldn't be loading it on the back of a pickup truck or something. It would be like seeing a burglar break through your deadbolt lock and deciding to switch to an open door policy instead. Like, no, you had the right idea, it just didn't work. But even though rail is the safest mode of transportation, there is room for improvement. Enforcing safety standards is one option. In 2015, for example, legislation was introduced in Congress that proposed stronger penalties to rail companies that violate safety standards, but it didn't go anywhere. Presumably, the 35th anniversary of Ozzy Osbourne's Crazy Train had the American public jazzed up about dangerous locomotives. But similar proposals have now surfaced after Ohio's derailment. Legislation like that could give sufficient reporting capabilities and safety gear to workers, direct the Federal Railroad Administration to study mechanical effects and derailments, and require companies to participate in a confidential reporting process that includes close calls and unsafe events, even if there wasn't an actual accident. Some members of Congress also want to lower the threshold for what is considered a high-hazard flammable train, so that more rail cars need to follow safety precautions associated with carrying dangerous chemicals. I propose adding Peter Pan buses to that list as well. You know, just 'cause. And if I can add one more thing. If one piece of positivity could have come from the awful derailment in East Palestine, it's that people are now aware of this issue. Vinyl chloride is in the news. It's in the public spotlight. It's getting a Sweaty Penguin deep dive. That's really how you know you've made it. But because people are starting to pay closer attention to vinyl chloride, it can create motivation for policy. And it can even help spur additional research. Dr. Beyer explained that in recent months, she's found people have expressed a lot more interest in her work.
This line of research actually has gotten a lot more attention since. You know, like in every field, there are always people that kind of doubt if it's, you know, important enough of a topic. And I've gotten a lot more attention on that. And I have even heard from people that previously have disregarded my line of research, not disregarded, but just questioned the validity of some of the things, come back to me and say, okay, I really get it now. I was just oblivious to the importance of it.
And that's really good to hear. The more we know, the more we can ensure any regulations or policies or investments are common sense. Certainly, we know enough to say vinyl chloride is worth avoiding, but if we can answer our unanswered questions, it can provide even more insight as we forge a path forward. Not only do we have the ability to reverse vinyl chloride's issues, but we can slide it to the left, slide it to the right, and ultimately, cha-cha real smooth.
Turn it up.
That wraps up episode 126 of The Sweaty Penguin. Take 2 minutes, help out the show, and get a shout-out at the end of the show by leaving a 5-star rating and a review on Apple or Podcast Addict, or join our Patreon at patreon.com/thesweatypenguin. You get merch, bonus content, and more. We do have a 5-star review today from Mr. Lammers on Apple Podcasts. 5 stars, great episode as usual. I may be the one who got the Burrow calf joke, hashtag it was worth it. Keep up the great work of shining a light on the science and solutions. That was in response to the whales episode, and I'm so glad that somebody got my Burrow calf joke. I really appreciate the review and the nod to that. Clips today came from CBS News. Special thanks to our Emperor Penguin patrons Lawrence Harris and Brownie Central. The Sweaty Penguin is presented by Peril and Promise, a public media initiative from the WNET Group in New York, reporting on the issues and solutions around climate change. You can learn more at pbs.org/perilandpromise. The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the host and guests. They do not necessarily reflect the opinions or views of Peril and Promise or the WNET Group. Thank you all for listening, and I'll see you next week. We've got a tip of the iceberg on the way about Hurricane Hillary, so I will see you then.